Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
Toothpicks are much more than little sticks of wood. Just ask Dr. Steven Potashnik, DDS. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Potashnik practices dentistry in the Loop. He's also amassed what's believed to be the world's largest collection of toothpicks, 1,500 of them. His new book, The Art and History of the Toothpick, features thousands of photos of his collection, toothpicks from the Victorian era, the Renaissance, the Middle Ages, even classical antiquity. It's also full of stories about how generations of people from around the world turned a fairly utilitarian tool into a work of art. We checked in with Dr. Potashnik to learn more, and he starts by telling us what it is about toothpicks that sparked his interest.
Well, it actually was something that found me rather than I found it. I was always a collector of medical, dental, and scientific things. And in 1992, I made the mistake of bringing home a dental cabinet. And my wife, who noted I already had one dental cabinet, said, "We need to keep things a little smaller. How about smaller than a bread box?" And I was lamenting to an antique dealer friend the problem. And she said, "How about these?" And I said, "What are those?" She said, "They're Victorian toothpicks." And I did a little research, and they were perfect because the size was right, the price was right, and I could easily smuggle them into the house from my office in my pocket.
Without your wife noticing.
And without her noticing. And the whole collection would sit in a couple of shoe boxes on my desk.
My goodness. You know, when the book first landed on our desks here at WBEZ, we honestly could not believe what we were seeing. I mean, the book really is, it's a beautiful coffee table book. And then the topic just kind of makes you take a step back and say, "Wait, what? Toothpicks?" So I'm curious how people react when you say to them, "I collect handcrafted antique toothpicks."
When you talk to dealers, antique dealers, one of the things I've learned is that many of them have no clue as to what I'm talking about. I'd go into a shop, I'd ask for an antique toothpick, and their eyes would roll back. They would make some comment about the toothpick in their mouth. It was something that I realized needed to be shown more.
Yeah. And this book is a merger of two collections, right?
That's
right. Your massive one and someone else's.
In 1997, an article was published in the Writing Equipment Society Journal on the similarities between toothpicks and pencils. And that was written by a man, Peter Katz, in London. And I wrote to him. We became fast friends and Zoom buddies. And COVID hit. And I acquired his collection that had about 750 pieces. I had about 750 pieces.
That's where we get the 1,500.
That's right. They complemented each other beautifully. It was something to fill the void that was missing because the last significant publication was in 1913 by a German dentist in German. And most of the articles that have been written show very few toothpicks. They describe the history, but there's no visualization of what was done. And routinely what people tell me is it's a surprise.
Yeah.
It's not what they expect.
Not at all. I mean, I'm looking at the book right now, and I was surprised to learn even by rifling through it, Doctor, that toothpicks were ever anything more than just these little wooden sticks that I use, after dinner. In your book, you've got pictures of some really elegant looking objects. Some are made of gold or mother of pearl. Some of them, you can fold them out. They almost look like Swiss Army knives.
They were a form of jewelry. In fact, in the Renaissance, they were worn as jewelry.
So people wore their toothpicks around their necks?
Around their neck on a chain.
Really? And was that a class symbol?
Yeah, these were not used by people in the average individual out there. They were people in high society who could afford these. Mm. The history of the toothpick actually goes back almost 1.8 million years to the prehistoric man. If you look at fossilized teeth, you see marks on the teeth that indicate that as their diets changed to more protein, things were getting stuck between their teeth, and they would use something from the natural environment to get it out and deal with the discomfort. That evolved into an art, crafts, innovation, and novelty. And when you look at these pieces, they're just beautifully made.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, they're carved so intricately in the shape of pretty much everything. I'm seeing fish and little dancers and swimmers. I am imagining you rifling through dusty museum collections to try to find some of these antique toothpicks.
You know, with the eclipse occurring, there's actually a set in the book of Halley's Comet. So there's an homage to them as well.
Yeah, that is lovely. And the book is beautiful. I mean, who took these photos? I mean, the quality is amazing.
I did all the photography myself.
You did?
Yes, but I worked with a couple of graphic designers from an organization called Dear Doctor, who were fabulous, and they did the layouts and the cut and pastes.
That's incredible. Really, really good work. So you explain in it that, the toothpick is really one of the oldest, continually used human tools. Talk a bit more about that history that you found out in this journey.
Well, as I said, the prehistoric man, going back 1.8 million years ago, there's evidence on those fossilized teeth that there are grooving between the teeth. And the only way that could have been created was with something like a shard of bone, a piece of stiff prairie grass or straw that they were using to force the stuck food out from between the teeth.
Oh, wow.
Over time, the toothpick related to the times it was created and the people who were creating them. And there was a constant change. So whalers and sailors who would go out for 3 to 5 years at a time to harvest whale oil would have a lot of downtime.
Yeah.
And they would use the products that were not commercially valuable to make knickknacks for their loved ones back at home or for themselves. Prisoners of war who were held in captivity for 5 to 6 years also were encouraged in the Napoleonic era to make products that they could sell at the local market and subsidize their existence.
Oh, wow.
There are pictures of royalty in a casket wearing a toothpick around its neck.
Mm-hmm. Back to being that kind of status symbol that you were talking about a moment ago, right?
As important in his death as it was in his life.
Wow. When did the fancier toothpicks sort of fall out of fashion? And why did that happen?
Well, it coincided with the mechanical pencil. That was something that changed writing, but also there was a form of innovation that these pen and pencil makers could take the cases that the pencil was in and place a toothpick in it. And these cases had different types of designs with twist mechanisms, slide mechanisms, and what were called magic pencil mechanisms, where you pulled on the case and the toothpick would exit the front of the case. They were made in gold and silver. They were, if a technique could be done on jewelry, it was also done on a toothpick.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Enameling, engraving, a variety of techniques such as that.
Yeah. These antique toothpicks, I mean, they seem to represent a lot about the culture they were in, Doctor. I mean, what do you think the toothpicks of today teach us about our own culture?
Very little.
Very little, right? I mean, they're just plain old wooden
pieces of wood, yeah. These were personalized. and very important to people.
Wow. Do you have a favorite antique toothpick in your collection?
People ask me that all the time.
I have to ask. And don't tell me it's like choosing your favorite child.
It's such a good question and such a hard one to answer. There's so much diversity in materials, mm-hmm. in innovation, in form, in shape, that it's impossible to pick out just one.
Yeah,
I have my favorites.
I mean, there's so many characters here. I'm looking through your book again. Animals. Which ones do you like?
I think I like the politically related ones.
Oh.
There were giveaways for the McKinley presidential campaign going back to 1896, I think it was. There are just so many, it's impossible
to
tell.
I know, I'm putting you on the spot.
When I speak to dealers or other people who don't know much about toothpicks, and they look at me a little cross-eyed, and I take out my phone and show them some images of what they look like routinely, what I'm told is, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and this antique hunting beyond toothpicks, is it easier said than done?
It is today. It was much easier finding these pieces years ago when I started in the early 90s.
Yeah, I'm picturing some rifling through bins at pawn shops or, you know, more so than just, you know, knowing a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy.
When we travel, I generally stop wherever I can to ask. You don't know where you're going to find these things. It's catch as catch can.
For sure.
It's a mystery how somebody knows what they are and will have some in their shop.
Well, it's all come together beautifully in this book. It's called The Art and History of the Toothpick, a catalog of the world's largest collection. We've been speaking with Dr. Stephen Potashnik, who's author of the book. Thank you so much for enlightening us on this delightful piece of history.
If you'd like to know more about it, you can go to my website, which is toothpickcollector.com.
Love
it. And that will show you what we're talking about.
Nice. This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Jules Yeager, edited by Meha Ahmed, and mixed by Max Lubers. Do you collect something? What do you collect? And why? Leave us a voicemail at 888-915-9945. That's our question of the week. You're on Reset. We'll be sharing your answers on the air in our daily newsletter and on this podcast. Thank you for listening. Be sure to check back with us tomorrow morning for a fresh episode.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.